WABC New York. From around the world to around the block, this is a 77-second news update from the RSESolutions.com news desk.
Good evening, I'm Frank Moreno. The CDC is sending out new international travel advice for those vaccinated and unvaccinated against COVID. The guidance is aimed at better differentiating nations with severe outbreak situations from others where COVID is sustained but controlled. Travelers are advised against visiting level 4 countries, but to be fully vaccinated if you do. Unvaccinated travelers should avoid non-essential travel to level 3 countries, and the first two levels recommend being fully vaccinated. The updated guidance also moved 33 countries into the lowest risk category. Senator Tim Scott thinks it will be difficult to have a bipartisan deal on police reform done by an end of June deadline. The South Carolina Republican told reporters it will be very hard if a proposal isn't put on paper in the next week or two. He noted there are very big differences in the legislation outside of the main issues being covered. Some of the main issues including qualified immunity and protection for police officers facing lawsuits for misconduct. Last month, Scott said it's June or bust. The World Bank is expecting the global economy to bounce back in a big way. In a new report, it projects global growth to reach 5.6% this year, which would be the strongest post-recession recovery in 8 decades. The global economy fell by 3.5% last year because of the pandemic. The report expects the U.S. economy to grow 5.4% this year. That's your 77-second news update from the RSESolutions.com news desk, where Mark Arzamanian will put you to work. I'm Frank Moreno on 77 WABC. Traffic and no traffic yet. The other side of midnight is straight ahead.
Greg Kelly, entertaining and informative.
So many people in the media these days, they just kind of want to be on TV. And now it's everywhere. With our stupid phones in our pocket, we take those pictures and we put them on Instagram. It's a facsimile of fame in your pocket. And that's all anybody seems to want these days is a little jolt of attention. They don't want to do the work.
Greg Kelly, weekdays from 1 to 3 p.m. before Rudy Giuliani on 77 WABC.
Gold and silver prices are at an all-time high. If you have any gold, silver, or platinum coins, bullion, Franklin mint items, diamonds, jewelry, art, antiques, paintings, French furniture, or any Tiffany items, sterling flatware, Judaica, oriental rugs, older baseball cards, sports and entertainment memorabilia, watches, especially better watches, such as Rolex, Patek Philippe, Vacheron, Tiffany, IWC, Cartier, Bulgari, just to name a few. They will buy them all at the highest cash prices, in any condition, even broken. They also need any designer jewelry, such as Cartier, Tiffany, Buccellati, Van Cleef, Harry Winston, and Bulgari. Now is the time to cash out at the world-famous APR 57 Gallery on 57th Street in New York City, across from Carnegie Hall. They can also come to your home and do certified insurance appraisals. So if you have anything of value, call them for a free appraisal and high cash offer at 212-246-2000. That's 212-246-2000. Or toll-free at 1-800-772-0054.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morning, everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. We cover a lot of subjects on this show. You name it, I think we've covered it. Foreign policy, UFOs, mysteries, conspiracies, politics, local, national, you name it. Business, culture, romance, movies, Star Trek, you name it, we've covered it on this show. But if you were to talk to me about what I enjoy talking about the most, whether it's on the air or off, the thing that I enjoy talking about most is talk radio. I am a lifelong fan of talk radio. I'm a longtime student of talk radio. And while I wouldn't consider myself an expert in talk radio, I would consider myself a great lover of talk radio. However, there are a lot of people who've listened to talk radio for some time. There's a lot of people who have very strong opinions about talk radio, but there's very few people that I consider to be experts in the history of this medium, namely on this medium's impact on electoral politics and how politics and talk radio reflect upon and impact one another. One of those gentlemen who is unquestionably an expert is the man who wrote the book on talk radio. More precisely, he's the author of the book, Talk Radio's America, Dr. Brian Rosenwald, political and media historian. Dr. Rosenwald, it is great to talk with you again.
Frank, it's always great to be with you.
Now, as I said, Brian, there are not a lot of folks that know about talk radio with any sort of substantive depth. You are one of the people that has made this a lifelong passion, even though you've been on the show before. Tell people briefly about your book, Talk Radio's America. What's it about? What inspired you to write it?
Well, it tracks talk radio back to the rise, really its modern rise in the 1980s, and to the catalyst of that. August 1st, 1988, Rush Limbaugh, then a new talk radio host on these very airwaves on WABC during the day, was launched a national program August 1st of 88, and it was a revolution in talk radio because at the time, there was only really talk radio in major markets. And the formula was totally different than it is today. The formula was it had to be local, it had to be driven by callers and interviews, and that it had to be, you know, you didn't hear the host's perspective at all. You didn't know what the host thought. And the only person who really did nationally syndicated talk was Larry King in the overnights, and he could go from talking to a congressman to talking about abominable snowmen. You have a little of the Larry King thing going there, Frank.
Totally. That's kind of what we're going for here. Exactly.
That's what you do in the overnights, right? And that was what was thought to be the only thing that worked in terms of nationally syndicated radio. And this was a moment that AM radio needed new programming because music sounded better on FM. And so they were looking for something new. And the book tracks how this becomes the it format in radio and takes off. And then the second half of the book tracks the political story of how nobody set out to influence politics by doing this. You know, Limbaugh said people listened to the radio for three things: entertainment, entertainment, entertainment. And he was an entertainer. He had been a former DJ, and he was trying to do that with talk. And he succeeded wildly. And it ended up having this huge political impact that nobody could have foreseen. Not the politicians, not the radio executives, and really reshaped our politics. And so that's the story that the book tells. And it ends with Donald Trump's election in 2016. And then there's a little epilogue where there's a little bit on the first half of his presidency for a page or two.
Since you talk about Rush Limbaugh, he is probably the most impactful radio talk show host in history, certainly in my lifetime. Obviously, I spoke to you the night after Rush passed away. We talked a little bit about his impact on the industry. Now, he was, at the time of his passing, the radio talk show host heard on the most stations. Now, a lot of those stations are starting to make plans about what they're going to be doing post-Rush. It doesn't seem that there's any consensus. It doesn't seem as if anyone is going to assume the mantle of all 600 of those stations. Give us the Reader's Digest version of what the plan for Rush replacements around the country is.
Well, what it looks like is every big radio company, they own syndication arms that produce programming, and they own dozens or hundreds of stations. And every one of them seems like they're putting their own option out there for their own stations. Whether it's Charlie Kirk is one Salem option. iHeartMedia, which was Limbaugh's syndicator, announced that Clay Travis and Buck Sexton are going to take that time slot at the end of the month. Cumulus, the other big kind of behemoth station owner, announced that they're doing Dan Bongino. And then Audacy, the other one, another big station owner, just cut a deal to bring Dana Loesch on some of their shows. Or stations. So you've got like a mishmash. Essentially, what you're seeing is what you see in other day parts, other times a day. You know, Limbaugh was big enough that nobody wanted to take him on. Everybody said, you know, that there's no point. Why go against Rush? Everybody wants to listen to Rush. And now that he's out, you have everybody looking for, you know, who's going to be the person who can kind of take command of that time slot. and really, you know, capture the audience? And my guess is the answer is no one. Nobody has that kind of talent. A lot of these people come out of the political world, and the audience may just fragment.
So it seems that that's exactly the case. The era of one person being heard for 3 hours a day on 600 different radio stations is over.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think that part of that is that, you know, most of these people have been selected to be like the next Rush. They share his political perspective. They're on stations that are, the format is conservative talk. And I think that to some extent, that's a mistake because, you know, if you look at what Limbaugh did at the beginning, he was trying to put on a good show. He was trying to have a good time. You never knew what Rush was going to say. And so I'm not sure that any of these people could grab that whole audience, even if there wasn't the competition. But especially with the competition, it's going to sort of, people will decide based on, you know, whose style they like the most or whose, you know, subset of issues they care about the most. As opposed to, you know, there being one person whose talent is far and away better than anybody else's and can just grab people and hold them listening.
Talking with Brian Rosenwald, author of the book Talk Radio's America. A lot of great WABC content in that book. But if you're a fan of talk radio, it's a book I highly recommend. We're going to take your calls throughout the hour. If you have questions about talk radio in general or anything in the news, especially as it relates to the media or the electoral political arena and its nexus with talk radio, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me ask you specifically about one of the people you just mentioned. That's Dan Bongino. I know he's had some success on the Fox News channel. Shortly after Rush passed away, a couple of months ago, I spoke with former WABC program director John Minnelli, the fellow that put Rush on locally here on WABC back in 1988. And I asked John what he thought about Dan Bongino's prospects for success in succeeding Rush. This is what he said.
Some markets are apparently going to be taking Dan Bongino, the former Secret Service agent who is a fixture on the Fox News channel. Do you think Dan Bongino has the ability to hold on to any of Rush's audience?
No, I don't. And I like Dan for what he does. I've seen him a million times on Fox as a guest and as a host. They were using him to sub for a lot of shows, although I don't think lately they had been. But no, I don't think... He is going to wear well. I think he's, relatively speaking, a bit shallow, obvious. He's certainly abrasive. I don't think I've ever heard anything humor out of him. And so, therefore, I don't think he's configured to...
And then he goes on to say he doesn't have to the kind of Rush's credibility as an entertainer, some of the factors you just mentioned. Do you agree with what Minnelli's take was on Bongino?
I do. I mean, I think that we've lost something of what made Rush so good. I think that both his opponents on the left and some of the people who benefited from his commentary on the right started thinking that all that matters is politics and what you have to say. But a good show is like your show, Frank, where you're talking about anything and everything, and you're having a good time. You know, Rush had fun. He used parodies. He used nicknames. He joked around. He made fun of himself. He made fun of his golf game. You know, there was a lot of different things that helped to build a foundational relationship with his audience. And I just don't think, you know, Bongino is a political commentator, and he's loud and he's abrasive. And, you know, I can tell you what he's going to say before he says it. And to me, that's the big problem because that makes bad radio.
Let me ask you the question, which I so often get asked by friends of mine, acquaintances, and even listeners who will call in, especially during our Ask Me Anything Fridays. Why? Look, there have been liberals who've been successful on talk radio. You've seen people like Tom Hartman, Alan Colmes, Lynn Samuels here in New York, Ron Kuby, Richard Bey. You've seen people like Jim Hightower, Ed Schultz. But you've not seen any liberal talk show host achieve the kind of mastery in a terrestrial talk radio format that Rush Limbaugh did and the kind of dominance that Rush Limbaugh did. And you really haven't seen a liberal talk station achieve the kind of rating success and revenue success that a lot of the conservative talk stations have. Certainly not nationally when there's been efforts to try to do so with efforts like Air America and so forth. I'll ask you the question I get so often. Why is it that liberals have not succeeded in the field of talk radio as much as conservatives have when they've done very well in cable news, they've done very well in podcasting, they've done very well in film, they've done very well in other forms of television? Why is talk radio such a tough nut for left of center and personalities to crack?
Well, there are a lot of factors here, but I'll give you two of the biggest. The first is that liberal audiences have a lot more to choose from in terms of content, especially spoken word content. You have, if you think about the liberal coalition, right? It's suburban professionals, people who are have a lot of, you know, NPR has a lot of appeal for them. You have minority voters who have urban and African American talk formats. You know, people like Joe Madison are very popular over the years. You have a very strong Latino talk radio in a lot of markets, especially markets with you know, large Latino populations. And that takes, you know, that potential audience away. And then you have a lot of young voters, and a lot of young voters gravitate towards, you know, kind of almost morning zoo kind of stuff, or Howard Stern, or they call it guy talk. We have a show here in Philadelphia. It's not even that political. It's not even that sexual, but it's been number one in the market for like 20 years in AM drive. And it's just fun and entertaining, and the audience skews young. So that's one factor. But there's another factor, and that is that so many of these people, when they put them on, they are reacting to what they hear when they hear Rush. I just told, you know, the audience that Rush comes on the air and he's trying to entertain people. He's trying to crack people up. The thing that I always kind of try to explain to liberal audiences is I say, you know, he was like a conservative version of The Daily Show in his early days. You might not have agreed with him. You might not have liked him, but he was funny. And instead, when they put people like Al Franken and Janine Garofalo on, people who are legitimately funny people, they went on, and if you listen to them, they said, you know, we're here to give voice to the other half of the country that isn't represented on the airwaves. We're here to help get rid of George W. Bush. This was 2004. I interviewed one of Franken's producers, and he said, you know, I said to him, Al, what'd you try to do every week on Saturday Night Live? And Franken said, I tried to put on a good show. And he said, well, why is this any different? And Franken said, well, it just is. You know, and if you listen to any of his shows, it wasn't that entertaining.
Yeah.
And they tried a lot of politicians, Jim Hightower, Mario Cuomo, and Gary Hart. And just because you can give a good speech doesn't mean you're a good radio host. The best people in radio, almost without fail, you mentioned Tom Hartman. He started as a DJ in his teens. So did Rush. So did so many other people. And they learned the craft of holding an audience, of entertaining people, of communicating through the radio airwaves. And there just haven't been a lot of, you know, veteran radio pros. If you look at the people who are successful, you know, in Air America, the one show that was really good from day one
was Randy Rhoads.
Yeah. Yep. And she was the talk pro. I mean, I had somebody tell me Randy Rhoads used to be on in Palm Beach after Rush. So when Rush is driving home, he's got this loud, aggressive, abrasive liberal. And he complained to corporate headquarters show. He said, I don't want to listen to her on the way home. And they told him what her ratings were. And he never asked about it again, you know, because she understood the business. And so that, to me, that's the key, is that so often they're plucking people who are not radio entertainers. They are not radio people, and therefore they don't know what it takes on radio, and they don't know how unique radio is.
We're going to continue with Brian Rosenwald talking talk radio for the hour. He's the author of the book Talk Radio's America. We will take your calls throughout the hour if you want to weigh in. If you have a question for Brian about talk radio, its past, its history, its future, its impact on the political arena, or anything in between, give us a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Let me tell you about a couple of people that might not be entertaining, but they certainly are effective. And that is the law firm of Angiuli and Gentili. If you've ever suffered a workplace injury, or if you have an occupational disease that has turned your life upside down, if you've ever asked yourself, how will I live while I'm out of work, or how will my work-related medical bills get paid, then ask yourselves those questions no longer, because the law firm of Angiuli and Gentili has been helping people like you out for over 35 years. They help take the fear out of the workers' compensation process. They're good folks. I know them firsthand. They'll meet with you, listen to your concerns, and explain how the workers' compensation process works. They'll get you the medical treatment and the workers' compensation payments you're entitled to. The Staten Island lawyers at Angiuli and Gentili have handled thousands of hearings and will help you walk with confidence. Call Angiuli and Gentili today. Write this number down. Even if you don't need a lawyer now, you may need one in the future. 888-234-COMP. That's 888-234-COMP. They offer both in-person consultations or contactless video appointments. That's 888-234-COMP, 888-234-2667.
The legal offerings mentioned in this ad are not a guarantee of services and or performance, as each case or matter is different and is judged on its own merits.
There's perspective.
You just got to keep an open mind.
And then there's New York perspective.
Are you as offended as I am?
And contrary to popular opinion,
you can't make deals with just anybody.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. New York City is about to change. Today from 4 to 6 p.m., it's New York City's Comptroller Debate, moderated by Dominic Carter, with Senator Brian Benjamin, New York State Assemblyman David Weprin, State Senator Kevin Parker, Michelle Caruso Cabrera, Zach Iskel, Brad Lander, and Corey Johnson. Live from Stage 77 at WABC Radio, it's New York City's Comptroller Debate from 77 WABC.
The perfect gift for Father's Day. An international thriller with elements of romance and detective novels. Years after the death of his gangster father, a young man defies the mob while searching for hidden treasure. Read the international suspense thriller, a detective novel from Jeffrey S. Stevens, Fool's Errand. A perfect gift for Father's Day. New York Trend exclaims Fool's Errand is poignant and entertaining, humorous and exciting, romantic and mysterious, an adventure that explores the relationship between a father and son and the events that will ultimately lead that young man to discover both the treasure and himself. Diane Taylor from Living Las Vegas exclaims, "The book was just pure pleasure." And as readers of this column know, not typically drawn to novels, but Fool's Errand is definitely an exception. Read the international suspense thriller, a detective novel from Jeffrey S. Stevens, Fool's Errand. The perfect gift for Father's Day. Available wherever books are sold.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
That's Blues Traveler. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. 1-800-848-9222. If you want to join the conversation with Brian Rosenwald and me, talking about the history of talk radio and its future, how it got to be where it is, and what impact it's played on the political world. Brian, based on what you're seeing, how has conservative talk radio fared in the post-Trump world? How are they reacting to the Biden presidency?
Well, it's funny. Every time a Democrat gets elected president, there's this narrative that goes around in the mainstream media of like, well, this is the end, or you know, is talk radio in trouble, or is Fox News in trouble? Well, here's the truth. Rush Limbaugh himself, he did an interview with Playboy, of all places, in 1993, showing that he was sort of just interested in having a good time. And they asked him about Bill Clinton getting elected. They said, you know, is this a problem for you? And he said, look, I worked hard for George Bush to win. He actually emceed a rally for George Bush the day of the election. And he said, I wanted Bush to win because I thought he was good for the country. But you know what? This is better for me as a host, because it's much more fun being outside the glass house throwing stones than trying to kind of defend what people have to do to govern. And Republican politicians will tell you that when they're in office, it's a lot harder. You know, talk radio is harder on them because there are compromises they have to make that don't make for good radio to try to explain them and that disappoint people. So I think conservative media has adapted fine. You know, there's a little bit of a struggle because Joe Biden does not make for a very good villain. You know, he's pretty likable.
Yeah, and he's also boring. I mean, it's not as if he's out there giving, you know, fire and brimstone speeches, whether you agree with them or not. You know, he's boring. He's very milquetoast.
Right. I mean, the most controversial thing the man does is usually his ice cream choices, right?
Very true. 800-848-9222. If you want to jump on board with Brian Rosenwald and me. Drew is in Westchester. Drew, what's your question for Brian Rosenwald?
I got one for Brian and then one for you. One that I say for Brian is, how does talk radio compete now, like on a political basis? Like, for instance, WABC, when you got mainstream radio stations like Hot 97, like Old Man Ebro in the morning, always weighing in on political things, having political mayoral candidates on their show. And, you know, they got a lot of young listeners, the mainstream listeners, and they're weighing in on.
That's a good question, Drew. Let me have Brian answer, and then I'm going to put you on hold, and I'll answer whatever question you have for me as well. Go ahead, Brian. Now, it's a fair question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one problem that talk radio has long term is that the demographics are not great. They are older, and they have really struggled over, you know, 15, 20 years. You know, how do we get younger listeners? And I think there's somewhat of a problem in that younger listeners tend to lean more left and older listeners tend to lean more right. And talk radio leans right in most markets, and strongly so. But I think one thing that they're going to do to help try to make things younger, and you're seeing this with Clay Travis coming from sports talk to take Limbaugh's slot as one half of the team taking Limbaugh's slot, is that there's a lot of kind of sports or cultural talk. I'm thinking about people like Joe Rogan and Clay Travis, that is kind of conservative culturally, but is a little bit less political. And I think that may be one strategy, but it's definitely getting harder because the lines are getting blurrier and you have more competition. It's not just other terrestrial radio shows, but it's also podcasts and YouTube channels and everything under the sun. Everybody has political opinions now,
right? Yeah, exactly. I was going to ask you about podcasts, but let me see what Drew's second question was. Drew, what was your question for me?
And my question for you is, I think you guys should be focusing on these county executive races. I understand, you know, the mayor race is coming up, but we pretty much know after the Democratic mayor is elected, it's going to be 99% chance that's who's going to be the next mayor. But you have these county executive races surrounding New York City, Westchester, Rockland, and Nassau. And it will be interesting to see post-Trump if a lot of these areas tend to vote more red.
Yeah, it is interesting, Drew. And I suspect that the mayor's race is going to have some surprises for you as well. I don't think it's going to be the certainty for the Democrats that you assume that it is. But we'll see what happens. I do think you'll see more coverage of those races as we get closer to November. The election's it's still 5 months away, so we'll see what happens. Bobby in East Chester, what's your question for Brian Rosenwald?
Oh, I just tuned in. I heard you're talking about talk radio. Yeah, I tuned in a little late, but I'm wondering, I remember when I was a kid and I was listening to Dr. Judy Kurienski. I don't know if you remember her, Frank.
Yeah, Dr. Judy's a close friend, and she's been a guest on this show several times.
Oh, wow. Well, I just remember she had a show called Love Phones when I was a kid. And, you know, when I was growing up, I used to listen to AM and FM radio. I used to listen to everything, and I remember the two guys, Barry Gray and Barry Farber.
Yeah, so what's your question, Bobby?
No, my question is, why is talk radio so different now than it was, you know, back in the day? Because I noticed it. You know, it's more about politics than about, you know, fun things.
I think, Brian, I think you addressed that earlier, but just to put a button on that, it seems to be mimicry of Rush Limbaugh's success. Do I have that accurately from your research?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I interviewed Barry Farber, and Barry Farber said to me, talk about a character. He said, you know, the only thing I wanted to avoid on the air was a guest who couldn't ad-lib a belch after a Bulgarian wedding. and he said, you know, I heard Limbaugh the first time, and I said to myself, why didn't you do that? It just would not have occurred to them to share their opinions and be political in that way. And the stations, as the caller's explaining, it were things that were what they called full-service talk stations. You might have a sports show at night. You might have had advice talk. You had, you know, love and romance kind of stuff. You had a liberal. You had a conservative. It was a very different model. And Limbaugh comes along, and a lot of radio executives, look, they'll tell you this themselves. They'll say, you know, we are not the most innovative breed of people. And they took Limbaugh's success as a sign that what you need to be was conservative and political. And that upended everything that they had before. Now, there were stations that kept up the model of full service talk, you know, for decades and were quite successful. But those stations were more expensive to run. They required better branding and advertising and community engagement. And conservative talk brought in ratings and revenue at, you know, and it cost less. It became largely nationally syndicated. And look, this is a business. And so it was good for the bottom line.
Well, yeah, we're talking with Brian Rosenwald, author of the book Talk Radio's America, with us for the full hour if you want to jump on board with a question. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We'll talk a little bit about politics and talk radio when we return, and politics in terms of, is it possible in this day and age to succeed, not on the podcast, not on cable news, but in terrestrial talk radio as a non-conservative? We'll continue with Brian Rosenwald next. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
The 77 WABC mobile app. Download it now.
Numbers mean much to me because of prostate cancer. I'm Johnny Braggs, the number two, for my stepfather who died of prostate cancer, and my uncle who suffered so much after prostate cancer surgery. The number 15, 15 years since Dr. Lederman's successful treatment of my prostate cancer. The number zero, which is my PSA, zero, after Dr. Lederman's successful prostate cancer treatment, what every man wants. The numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, important for every man with prostate cancer. 1, getting the most successful treatment. 2, avoiding radical robotic surgery. 3, keeping sexual function. 4, maintaining urinary control. Call my Dr. Lederman, 212-CHOICES, 212-CHOICES, to consider his prostate cancer treatment for you. Most insurances, Medicare, Medicaid, etc. 1384 Broadway at 38th. Call 212-CHOICES for prostate cancer treatment. Call Dr. Lederman, 212-CHOICES. I'm glad I did. You'll be number one with Dr. Lederman.
This is a test of the emergency alert system.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. In the event of an actual emergency, this system will bring you important information. This is only a test.
It's Ramsey Mazda's Sundays with Sinatra. This Sunday night starting at 6.
Strangers in the night.
With your host, the Vice Chairman of the Board, Joe Piscopo.
It's the good life. And the way you look tonight.
It's Ramsey Mazda's Sundays with Sinatra. This Sunday night starting at 6.
With me, Joe Piscopo.
On
Music Radio. WABC. Frank Morano. 77 WABC.
She sits alone by a lamppost, trying to find a thought that's escaped her mind. She says, there's the one I love the most, but stops not far behind. She never left me here, only tells me.
The This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. We're talking about talk radio with Dr. Brian Rosenwald. He's a political and media historian, author of the book Talk Radio's America, a must-read for anybody interested in learning more about the history of this format. You know, it's interesting, Brian. One of the things that we've seen is that so much of the function of talk radio, which used to be to give a voice to people that were frustrated about something and to give people that wanted to pontificate about anything a forum to do that, so much of that has been replaced by social media, Facebook and Twitter. And somebody that was able to use both talk radio and social media to great electoral success was Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump could still get on any talk station he wants, pretty much. But he's banned from Facebook for at least 2 years. He's banned currently from Twitter, banned from Instagram. I'm wondering, what role do you think the Twitter and Facebook bans on Donald Trump will play in a possible 2024 Trump bid for the presidency?
Well, before we get to that, Frank, I got to tell you, your bumper music has me wanting to break out my 90s playlist between Blues Traveler, Hootie and the Blowfish. And that was one of the things that Rush innovated with, was using rock music, and you got guys using country music. But you've got good taste in that stuff.
I thank you. Appreciate it.
In terms of Trump, I think that it's much harder for him to drive news cycles. And to some extent, I think Twitter is a great distorter in our politics. You know, only 23% of Americans use Twitter, but because all the reporters are there, you can drive news cycles with it. And I think that what he did so effectively was he was always throwing up fresh content. There was always something, you know, I edited a newspaper section. And the thing that I liked least about him was, you know, you get to Friday night when you usually be gearing down, have plans for the weekend, and he'd tweet something incendiary or off the wall that would drive a whole brand new news cycle on Saturday or on Sunday. And he just kept putting out new content. So I think that it hurts his ability to drive news cycles and to kind of capture the same degree of attention that he did before. It's also harder probably for him to really reach his base in the way that he did, unfiltered. You know, he's issuing all these press releases and they sound a lot like his tweets, but my guess is that
who's seeing them?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're just not getting to the same audience. So I think that it hurts him in that regard. That being said, I think if he runs again, he's going to be out on the road. He's going to be doing his rallies. He's going to be on talk radio. He's going to be out there, you know, on his YouTube. They'll end up, you know, doing, they had that, the Trump TV and some of the other vehicles. I think he will find a way to get out there, but it's certainly, you know, he's had his big megaphone kind of taken away and think he was using to drive news cycles.
Well, no doubt about it. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Margaret is in Brooklyn. Margaret, what's your question for Brian Rosenwald?
Oh, it's just a statement about Rush. I don't think he can be replaced. He's irreplaceable. I think you guys are all here because of him. And only one of his substitutes, I think, can run a close second. But he never cut anyone off, and he was never short with anyone, very congenial. And I guess it was just his Midwestern flavor. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, thank you, Margaret. Anything you want to add there, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, he went to Sacramento, and for the first time, this is when he takes off. People forget Rush was fired 5 times as a DJ. Or I'm sorry, 4 times as a DJ, 1 time when he was working group sales and marketing for the Kansas City Royals, of all jobs. And then his first job as a talk radio host, he got fired. And he got fired because he wasn't great at listening to his bosses, which is not usually the best technique for maintaining one's employment. And he finally gets to Sacramento, and he finally gets management that supports him. And they said, look, the one thing we want you to do is be polite. And he was not a screamer. He was not someone who was going to rant and rave at people. And the dirty little secret about talk radio is that conservative hosts would like nothing more than a flood of liberal callers, because it makes for good radio to have that back and forth. And Rush, you know, he understood that this was about his opinions. He only took the callers who interested him, and he was interested in being polite. He didn't think he had to scream or rant or rave, even though he appreciated the Bob Grants of the world.
Well, that's for sure. Bill is in Brooklyn. Bill, what's your question for Brian Rosenwald?
Good morning, guys. Got a quick question. Do you think, for either, do you think that the fairness doctrine, and I'll let you guys describe it probably better than I can, the fairness doctrine, could it be weaponized by the Democrats against conservative talk radio?
Well, the fairness doctrine is not in existence anymore. Your question is if they bring it back, I guess, Bill.
Yeah, or would, you know, if it could be weaponized, then would they bring it back?
Right. Go ahead, Brian. I'll leave that one to you since you deal extensively with the fairness doctrine in your book.
Absolutely not. I think it is something that conservative hosts like to bring out, some of them every so often, as kind of like a scare tactic about what Democrats would do. And look, I think either party, if they could weaponize any sort of regulation to benefit their side, they do it. And in fact, the fairness doctrine was used by both John Kennedy and Richard Nixon to go after opponents. But the thing about the fairness doctrine is it only applied, it required overall balance in a station's discussion of controversial issues. And it only applied to broadcast radio and television stations. So today, if someone were to try to resurrect it, it would not apply to cable, not apply to the internet, not apply to, you know, a large amount of the content that people consume. Secondly, I don't think it's constitutional at this point, because the rationale that led the Supreme Court to uphold it was scarcity. The idea that there were a limited number of signals on radio and television, and that therefore they owed it to their communities to give a diversity of opinions. It, you know, was fairly reasonable when it was enacted in 1949. Well, flash forward to 2021, and the last thing that we have is scarcity. You know, between social media and the internet and, you know, talk radio, cable news, you can get any flavor of opinion if you want it. You just have to find it. But it's out there. And no one, you know, there's nothing that is completely marginalized that you can't get in some way, shape, or form.
Thank you, Bill.
I don't think it's constitutional.
800-848-9222. Where does a guy like Michael Smirkanish fit in either the radio world or the cable news world? He's uncharacteristically non-doctrinaire. I know you've been a guest on his show, and he's as big a fan of yours as I am. I'm wondering, where does a guy like Smirkanish fit in the current media landscape?
Well, full disclosure, Michael's a friend, and I think he's great. And I wish we had more like him, because what I like the most about Michael is that you never know exactly where he's going to come down on an issue. And I find that more entertaining than someone who I know what they're going to say. But, you know, there have been real limits for people on terrestrial radio, because you have a lot of radio executives who believe in something called format purity. And basically, they take it from music radio. When you turn on the rock station, you don't turn it on to hear somebody crooning about pickup trucks with, you know, a pedal steel guitar and a fiddle in the background. You don't tune in for Beethoven's Fifth or something. You are tuning in for rock music. And they assume that if you're tuning in for conservative talk, you want conservative talk. And I'm not sure that that's true. I think that that sells people short. But they've been kind of because of this, even when you have people who have succeeded locally who are not as doctrinaire, there are guys named John and Ken out in LA who have been wildly successful for 30 years. And when they went into national syndication, it didn't work, because they'd be on these conservative talk stations and get these, you know, at that point it was letters and faxes from people saying, well, you're not conservative enough. And so it's been problematic for a lot of very talented, capable people who they just, terrestrial radio is not a fit for them. But I think we'd be better off and it would be more interesting, the product, if you had more people like Michael, who just, you'd never know where they're going to come down. They have a good time. I mean, last week he was talking about the big story here in Philadelphia. There's a restaurant that instituted $100 minimum and a dress code. And so he was going to town on that. And he just has a good time. And that, to me, is good radio. And I think it's what you do. It's what he does. And we need more of that. But you have a lot of this kind of sort of structure in talk radio, in terrestrial talk radio, that says that that won't work. And so they don't really give people a chance, and they don't really brand things in that way. And so it's troubling, you know, for guys like that. they can't get onto 200, 300, 400, 500 stations because they don't really fit into the format as it's defined so narrowly.
Where do you see, seeing as how, and we're talking with Dr. Brian Rosenwald, a longtime political and media historian, author of the book Talk Radio's America, where do you see the future of talk radio going? You mentioned a lot of the people that have done well, both on the right and the left, either started in small markets or started as DJs. Well, now, with very few exceptions, there really are no more radio DJs, and there really are no more small market stations, at least not any with more than a couple of hours of local programming. So it's difficult to see where the next crop of talk radio stars comes from. How do you see the future of the medium, Brian?
I think it's bleak, to be very honest, and I think it's because it's destroying itself. You hit the nail on the head. I talk to programming executives. These are people who have been doing this for 20, 30, 40 years, and they say, you know, we're not building a farm team anymore. It used to be those folks were in slots like this one, late at night, or they were on the weekends, or they were DJs, and they were learning the craft. And they're not really, you know, there isn't that breeding ground. Yes, there's podcasts, but it's different. You know, a podcast host doesn't necessarily know how to hit their ad time or get out for, you know, a hard break or something in the same way. And so I think that that is a huge problem. And you're going more and more to syndicated talk. I think that the thing that AM radio can offer that is very hard for podcasts and other digital forms to offer is a local connection to a community. You know, you had the caller earlier in the hour talking about controller or talking about county executive races. There was an ad for a controller debate. Like, that's the kind of thing a podcast can't offer. But an AM stick is rooted in a station. Or is rooted in a city. And so I think that we need more local talk to make this work, because otherwise eventually you're going to get to a point that people can turn on their phones, like, you know, listen to something on their phones in the car, same way they can listen to AM radio, not push the exact same amount of buttons. And they're going to say, why am I going to listen to commercials? I don't need to.
Right.
And so I think that the one thing AM radio can offer is local, but local requires investment. It requires owners who care about the community and are willing to invest in more local programming, more hosts, you know, giving people a chance to grow their craft and get better. Because, you know, if we could bring Rush back, he would tell you that he was not as good when he started in Kansas City with his first talk radio show in the early 80s as he was by the time he left Sacramento in 88. He refined things. He, you know, worked on elements, and it's important. So I think that it's a big problem that maybe isn't a problem in 2021, but will be a problem in 2031.
Why are podcasts not a fertile farm team for the next generation of great talk radio superstars? Why, with so many podcasts, there's got to be a couple of great future radio talk show hosts among them.
Well, I think that it can be, but I think that learning the craft of, you know, getting out to breaks and getting, you know, interacting with callers and things is a little bit different. And so I also think that a lot of the podcasters who get sort of elevated to the radio are people like Dan Bongino or Charlie Kirk, who are fundamentally, you know, political commentators who are doing this kind of thing, that it's not necessarily the people who are, you know, generating audiences or putting out really good programming, but they are recognized for their talent. There are people who are being recognized because they're getting swept up in the conservative media ecosystem as guests on Fox.
Sure.
And, you know, they're getting subscribers from that, and then they write books, and it's all mutually reinforcing. And it's not about talent. If you go back to those early days of talk radio, it was about talent. It was who could hold an audience. It was who could, you know, famously, the guy who took Rush National, Ed McLaughlin, former president of ABC Radio, didn't like Rush the first time he heard him in a hotel room. He thought he was arrogant. He thought he was unlikable. Then he listened in the car. And Rush had an ability, as you're, you know, focused on the road, to kind of reach through the speakers and really grab him and get him listening. And he changed his mind. And that's a talent. And it's something that, you know, you have to cultivate this craft. And I think there's too much of podcasting is being driven by people's views and their politics, not their, you know, ability to entertain. And the other thing about podcasts, of course, is a lot of the best ones and the most popular ones are storytelling. They're scripted. They are, you know, long form. They're not necessarily interactive conversations, which makes for the best talk radio.
That's a great point. 800-848-9222 if you want to call in with a question. 1-800-848-WABC. Charlie Finch calling from the East Village. Hello there, Charlie.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm, as Frank knows, both a JFK Democrat, a longtime political activist and writer, and a big Trump supporter. What bothers me about Rush, O'Reilly, Kennedy, Levin, Bongino, and Kirk is however successful they are, they're not very bright and they're not very sophisticated. Listening to Mark Levin on this station last night, I applaud John Catsimatidis for the great job he's doing because ABC is really good. Hearing Mark Levin, Mr. Rosenwald, explain who Herbert Marcuse and the Frankfurt School was, it's just painful. They're offering a watered-down version of intellectual life to the masses, and it bothers me because I support Trump because the liberal elites are causing real problems for our country, whether it's debt.
Charlie, do you have a specific question? Because I want to get to some other folks,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'm saying, why don't you just answer my concerns, Frank?
All right, thank you. Brian, answer Charlie's concern.
Look,
people are not smart enough for him. I don't think anybody's smart enough for him. If you talk to him for more than 8 seconds, he'll let you know that which Ivy League school he went to.
I mean, my take on it is somewhat similar in that I don't think it's a question of smarts. I think it's a question of being interesting. I personally don't like Mark Levin because when I was listening to his show with earbuds, I had to take them out because he would just scream. And I don't think that that's particularly entertaining. You know, it sort of fits with what John Minnelli said to you about Dan Bongino. It's not, I don't think that's a good. I don't think that that's entertaining. I don't think that that requires any enormous amount of skill. And I, most importantly, I think it's kind of boring. Mm. I can tell you what Levin's going to say or Bongino or any number of these people before they say it. And so I think that you need more unique hosts who have a unique perspective, bring something different to the table and make it so that I tune in every day because I want to hear what they're going to say.
Is there a way that you can see the innovations in technology, including podcasting and on-demand listening, can you see that somehow inuring to the benefit of talk radio and terrestrial talk radio? Is there anything that terrestrial talk radio stations or even individual programs can do to use the changes in technology to their benefit rather than be the victims of technological innovation?
I think a smart station owner and station manager can absolutely turn it to their benefit. You can start by running podcasts, you know, bringing in interesting people, local broadcasters, maybe local newscasters, people, you know, could be a DJ, could be someone who wants to do something who says, you know, let me have do an hour podcast that's sports and politics. You know, we think, well, you can't mix them. But anytime I'm ever at a bar, that's what people are talking
sure.
about, both
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
You know, or somebody who wants to mix music and politics or something. You can use that as a way to build a farm team. You can use that to do, you know, some YouTube stuff and things that capture a different audience or reach people in a different way. So I think somebody who's smart and creative can say, hey, this doesn't have to hurt us. This is a way to get around some of the limitations that are imposed by budget, that are imposed by only having a 24-hour broadcasting day, that are imposed by kind of worrying about trying different kinds of programming, for example. You know, if you think that your terrestrial radio audience is only focused on conservative talk, maybe you try some other voices with different perspectives in a podcast thing and let them build an audience that way and let them build a style. And then you try them on the radio. There's a lot of things you can do to take advantage of it and build kind of a synergistic relationship between the two and be a media company that is all of these things. But I'm not sure that the big guys necessarily understand this. They're just sort of applying the same rules of AM talk to podcasting in terms of what they're doing. And I'm not sure that that's, you know, going to be any better. But I think that if you get somebody who's creative, you get somebody who's willing to invest and, you know, maybe pay out at the beginning and invest in the startup cost, so to speak, in doing this the right way, that they can certainly turn it to the advantage of the medium.
Donald is here in New York City. Donald, what's your question for Brian Rosenwald?
Yes, hello. Are you guys familiar with Car Talk?
Yeah. I've never listened, but I know what it is.
Yeah, I thought it was extremely funny. And I don't even own a car.
Well, hey, I think that you're proving, Donald, Brian's point, which is it's not what you're talking about. It's how you're talking about it. So I think that's an important point. Real quick, before we run out of time here, Brian, my co-anchor of the news from 5 to 6:30, Juliet Huddy, she, like so many Americans, is obsessed with royal watching. She loves the royals. She's up on Prince Harry and Meghan and Andrew and Charles. She had to be revived with smelling salts when Prince Philip died. Why are so many Americans still so caught up in royal watching?
I wish I knew, Frank. It is the most boring thing. And, like, who cares about these people that haven't been important in government in decades?
Centuries.
Right? Centuries. Yeah. Like, you know, and more importantly, we revolted against royalty and that whole idea of hereditary monarchy. And yet you've got these people, they've got to have a royal tea, you know, they buy from a tea company and a royal donut. You know, I remember I was in Dunkin' Donuts for one of the royal weddings and they have like a royal donut. And I'm thinking to myself, why do people care? This is so ridiculous. I mean, I just don't get it at all. And I'll tell you, the last time I said that on Twitter, boy, did the complaints rain down. I provoked a lot of people with that one. And I don't understand why, because it is just crazy. I mean, everything this week about the royal baby and all this stuff, all I could think of was, God, Lilibeth is a weird name. Why don't you just go with Lily? You know, I mean, that was sort of all I was like, you know, why do we care? And then I was flipped the TV on. Somebody had something else on before me, you know, before I put the ball game on. And that they're analyzing like the maternity wear that she had going. And I'm just like, who cares? These people are not inherently important. It's like celebrity culture run amok.
Finally, Brian, when I left the airwaves yesterday at 6:30, there were all sorts of reports that the New York Times, CNN, a whole bunch of news organizations had their websites down. Immediately, my first thought, and I think the first thought of a lot of people, was that this was another ransomware attack. We've now seen these ransomware hackers attack meat suppliers. We've seen them attack an oil pipeline. Where do you see this country going with respect to combating ransomware in the future?
Well, as unserious as I think the royals are, that's how serious we better be about ransomware, because this is terrorism, Frank. We have to consider this like terrorism, because I'll tell you, you don't have to attack the United States anymore, because you start hacking enough of these systems and you can take the hospitals out. They've done it with the meat packing, and we saw, you know, one pipeline, all of a sudden two or three states, they're running out of gas. And it is a real problem, and we have to react to it just like we would if we were physically attacked. And I think we need to probably reorient some of the defense budget into fighting this stuff, because I think it's the next frontier for warfare, is people who are weaponizing this and using it to shut things down. And we also probably have to upgrade our tech. You know, it can't just be some guy using a computer that has like Windows 98 somehow still running on it, with all these vulnerabilities and things. But we really have to start taking it seriously. If you ask me what I think our number one, you know, problem is going forward, it might be this stuff.
Yeah, no, I think you might be right. We've been talking with Brian Rosenwald. If you're a fan of talk radio, you must check out his book, Talk Radio's America. He's also a scholar in residence with the Partnership for Effective Public Administration and Leadership Ethics, and editor of the Made by History column. Brian, it is always a real treat to talk with you. Hope we can do this again soon.
Frank, it's my pleasure, and yeah, let's do it again in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. We'll look forward to that. Brian Rosenwald, you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you're welcome to give me a call next hour, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is long-form interview week here on The Other Side of Midnight. I should have asked Brian if he was going to be at Talkers on Friday. But Christian, if he's still there, ask him if he's going to Talkers, and then he's gone. All right. Well, we'll find out. We're going to be at the Talkers conference on Friday. Now, this is long form interview week, which is some people are loving, some people are not so loving. A woman commented in the Facebook
group yesterday. And if you want to join the Facebook group, just go on Facebook and type Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. Nice lady named Cheryl, and you could tell she's a listener to this show. She said, sorry, Frank, I don't think I'm liking this trial new format. One of the compelling facets of your show is usually the beginning, where you talk about what's going on in the news, your life, opinions, etc. To launch right into an hour-long interview, last night was like Johnny Carson forgoing his monologue to have a prolonged interview with Harrison Ford. Well, I actually wouldn't mind seeing Johnny Carson interview Harrison Ford. But that's what this show's all about. It's about experimenting, mixing and matching, and pushing the envelope and hiccuping. All right, coming up next hour, there is one blatant form of discrimination that's going on in this country. I'll tell you what it is. And this week, it was just sanctioned by the Supreme Court. Stay tuned. Your influence counts, so use it.
From around the world to around the block, this is your 77-second news update from the RSC.